Welcome to the White Hats and Lab Coats podcast, presented by the Biohacking Village. Each episode will explore DIY bio, citizen science, and medical device security with guests from the healthcare, cybersecurity research, and biohacking communities. Hosted by Nina Alley and Bo Woods.
Hey, welcome to the podcast. Today we're going to have a special guest, David Nathans, on the podcast from Siemens. David is a security industry veteran and now leads some of the security practices over at Siemens Health and Ears. Welcome, David.
Hey, how's it going? Great theme music.
Thanks.
So yeah, I'm from Siemens Health and Ears, and just to put it out there, Siemens Health and Ears is a separately managed company now from Siemens. So it is a wholly owned separate entity.
Cool. Does that give you more freedom and flexibility to do stuff that wouldn't fly with?
Right. Why the separation?
It's a good question. I think that if you look at a lot of the large companies that are out there doing medical device manufacturing, they're starting to separate from their parent organizations. So I think it's an interesting time for healthcare because we might see a lot of large M&A activity.
Really?
It's kind of, I don't know, read the tea leaves.
Yeah. Do you think we're going into a downturn and that's what's going to drive some of it?
I don't know about a downturn. I think if anything, it's more of an upturn. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a lot of great technology that's out there that
people are going to start putting it together.
What's that?
And people are going to start putting their tech together.
Yeah,
I think so. This is like all the magical dreams come true.
Yeah, I mean, think about it, right? It's great time to be alive. If you have a medical issue, the technology that we use to support patients is, bar none compared to any time in history. And mm-hmm. we have a lot of technology where if we can ramp up, consolidate, and produce great product, then we can really help people who need it.
Well, that's always the goal, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Can I part into that then? So you're talking about the M&As and Siemens and the partitions. So is Siemens Health and Ears going to start doing any venture? Or are they going to start looking at the people that are doing a bit more of the citizen science side of things and pick those up?
Well, M&A happens all the time. So Siemens is buying and divesting companies. So are a lot of the other medical device manufacturers. And sometimes when we go to conferences, I'm talking to other counterparts from other companies, whether it's Beckman Coulter, GE, Johnson & Johnson. Sometimes we talk about different business units that we've bought and sold from each other.
Yeah, and just to clarify, M&As, mergers and acquisitions.
Yes.
Okay.
So, Dave, we have something that's like a 2 to 5 minute drill. Sent you over a set of questions, which you may have seen before in different forms. But just for help context setting, so folks know who you are, how you fit in the background, and like why they should really pay attention. If you could run through the, who are you, the thumbnail of your mission, what do you fear if we get it wrong, what do you hope for if we get it right, what do you need, and what do you have to offer?
Sure. So my background really stems from security operations. I've managed and run some of the largest security operations in the world, including doing a lot of work in security operations for the United States Air Force. I worked running global security operations for VeriSign. And I've also been the chief information security officer for some pretty large companies, and including defense contractors and retail. My specialty, if you will, is I consider myself a breach remediation expert. I like to go into companies that have been hit, work with them to figure out, where the problems are from a root cause, and work with them to change the culture. Get people doing things, really from the ground up correctly in the name of security, but also help, strengthen the infrastructure and just really get themselves to a steady state, secure operation. And I came to Siemens, as everyone probably knows, back in 2010, there was an issue at Siemens called Stuxnet. Mm-hmm. And Stuxnet was clearly a critical event around the world. But one of the things that really impressed me about Siemens is that they didn't really take it lying down. They didn't say, hey, you know, this stinks, woe is me. They actually rose to the challenge, which was very impressive to me. They decided that across their entire product set, across all divisions, all business lines, all groups everywhere across the world, that they were going to have someone responsible for product security and product security engineering. So every single product at Siemens has at least two people looking at that product from a security perspective. And you really can't say that that a lot of other companies will invest and really take to heart a cyber incident like that and push forward. So that was impressed me. And I came to Health and Ear specifically because I knew that healthcare was an industry I really hadn't had a lot of experience with, but I also knew it was an industry that needed a lot of help. Mm-hmm. Throughout my Air Force career, you know, whenever we were doing testing, we were doing pen testing, we were doing evaluations, we always stayed away from the military treatment facilities. Mm-hmm. The hospitals were always just off limits. Right. And the reason for that is because everyone knew that they were vulnerable. They knew that they had issues. So why bother testing them? And I think, you know, as time went on and cyber really took shape, we just can't be in that, you know, bury our heads in the sands mentality anymore, that everything that's connected has to have a good security posture and needs to really be built from the ground up with security in mind. And if you can't have it fully secure, it needs to at least be modular so that way security can be added on as time continues. And mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the challenges for healthcare. And one of the things that really worries me is that we build devices and, you know, not just Siemens, but a lot of, you know, the medical device manufacturers build great products from a clinical perspective, but they're focusing on that, the clinical mm-hmm. perspective, not necessarily the IT, the technology that clinical function is riding on. And when you build a really great product, you want it to last a really long time. I mean, I have a great printer from HP that I've had since 1999. It still prints. It's great. Is it vulnerable? Yes, it is. So that's one of my fears is can we build a device that will withstand the test of time? And if we don't make our devices modular and upgradable, then we will never have a chance to do that. And I think the threats are growing. And I don't think that there's a lot out there today that are specifically targeting medical devices. There's certainly some, I'm not going to discount that, but when a hospital environment is attacked, if the medical devices are not secure, they're going to be impacted, plain and simple. So that's, I guess, my biggest fear. You know, I think at least at Siemens, what I've had to offer is really helping to bring a lot of these challenges to light and change the culture. I've been there almost 6 years now. It's a large organization. And, you know, when I first got here, you know, it was sky is falling mm-hmm. and I'm kicking and screaming and, you know, yelling at rooftops and getting mad at people. But, you know, in a positive way to try and help change that culture. And now I'm at the point where I can really just sit back and watch that culture, you know, do the things that it's supposed to do because it's been ingrained. And, you know, it's not just kicking and screaming, it's reward programs, it's training, it's education, it's getting tools and technology into the hands of the people that need it in order to make them successful and showing them really what right looks like. And I will tell you that I've never come across a single person at my organization that didn't want to do cyber. It was that they didn't know how, or they were resource constrained, or they were time constrained. And then we need to take a look at that, work with them, and figure out a way around that so they can be successful. And that's a great news story.
I have questions.
Go for it.
So from what you're saying, Siemens Healthineers is doing a lot of internal changes, making all these wonderful things happen. I love that. How does your work inside translate to work outside with the government? So FDA, HHS, CMS, all the other agencies, to either start working together better or at least lining up better so that patient care by patient medical devices work?
So we work pretty closely with FDA. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they're our regulator. And as most people know, the FDA, CDRH specifically, has stepped up and created a cyber program with the pre-market and post-market guidance for medical devices, which is great. Mm-hmm. And it's a great effort. And they're really starting to get involved in the community, and we work with them, and we need them. From my perspective, internally, I need them to step up and say, hey, here are the fundamental tenets that you need to abide by, because that just helps enable me internally to help answer the question, why do we need to do this? You know, sometimes when you're dealing with cyber, it's like, well, no one's ever compromised my device. No one's ever hacked into my organization. So, you know, why do I need to do this? You know, and clearly you can have the argument, well, why do you want to wait until something bad happens? Mm-hmm. But when compliance comes in or when regulations come in, then it helps speed things up.
Right.
But I don't think the FDA really wants to be heavy-handed. On the flip side, though, you know, we really don't come into contact with HHS or OCR very much. Mm-hmm. And there's obviously a lot of other regulatory bodies out there, and we're an international company, so we have to mm-hmm. look at a lot of the other international agencies that are out there. So one of the things that I did a couple of years ago is I established a customer advisory board.
Yep.
Where we were bringing in the CISOs and senior security engineers from a lot of the major medical institutions around the country and the world, to say, hey, what are your challenges? What are your regulatory bodies saying to you? So we can align on priorities. So that way, when a device of ours, you know, lands at their loading dock, that there's an expectation that, you know, A, it's going to be as secure as possible, B, secure by default, but also C, not going to be a regulatory compliance issue the second they plug it in. And that's really how we've been managing this, is through the customers as a partner. Mm-hmm. We've only really started to see HHS come to the table.
Okay. So what other changes are happening with all of that internally? And if HHS and FDA are the only ones that are coming to the table, and by that you mean U.S.-based organizations, who else on the international side is coming to the table so that better engagement is happening?
Well, there's more than just that. So I think you're mostly talking about from a regulatory perspective, but we're very involved with DHS. Mm-hmm. And on the international side, we see a lot of the same type organizations. Mm-hmm. In Germany, BSI, the Chinese version of FDA is also starting to get, you know, very involved. And a lot of the countries are starting to get involved. I think a lot of them also work together. So we're not mm-hmm. seeing very much difference from different organizations internationally. There might be a couple of nuances, but we try as hard as we can to deconflict those.
So you're talking about data. Are you familiar with the One Belt, One Road initiative in China?
I am familiar with a little bit of what's going on in China, specifically the China 2025.
Okay.
Made in so China initiatives. But I'm not sure how that relates to what you're saying.
So, well, there's so much more. So they're starting to collect data points for healthcare so that they can better regulate it, better help the patients, do all of those things. And also the Middle East has started their own initiative very similar to that. How would the data that's gathered from the medical devices from Siemens help? Do they have access to that sort of data?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So Siemens products that are connected to our support infrastructure, which is not a large percentage of devices, but the ones that are connected to our infrastructure do collect a ton of telemetry information mm-hmm. for support reasons. So a lot of that information could be reagent mixes, water content in the laboratory environment. It could be percentage of power in radiation or in any kind of the imaging worlds, image quality, that type stuff. But most of that information is really reserved for Siemens support and Siemens engineering to ensure that the devices are operating within scope.
So being that they're looking for that sort of data, would Siemens turn around and hand it back to those government agencies so that they can start building up those data points?
I don't see why not. I mean, I guess it depends on the data points they want and mm-hmm. if those are the right data points that we have. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that the company would be very willing to participate in programs like that. Again, if the data elements are there. Right. We don't collect a lot of treatment data, so I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure if that is something that they'd be looking for. But, certainly if there is a data collection initiative and it was, non-clinical or non, PHI or EPHI related, then we'd be more than willing to help.
Okay. And at the provider level, those countries run their own health systems, so they would already have access to that data anyways, right?
They would either have access or the access would be available upon request. But again, it really depends on, what type of system, what type of information that they have. Okay. And if that system is connected for us to actually get that information.
So you mentioned some of the U.S.-based efforts, and particularly the FDA that's working well. Maybe elaborate on that. What is working well, and what maybe internationally needs to change in order to kind of get us to the vision state that you see in the future of better devices in the hands of more patients for better health?
Sure. I mean, I wouldn't say that everything the FDA is doing is working well. I think what's working really well is their efforts to engage the healthcare community and work with medical device manufacturers and providers to come out with a reasonable set of guidances that make sense to help drive the industry for cyber. They're not doing it in a silo, which I guess they could very easily do, but they're really working with organizations to make sure it makes sense and it's the right things to do. But they also don't necessarily know what the right things are to do. So they're working with the community to try and figure out what those things are and then try and document them and then push them out as guidance. I think other organizations have really stepped up to help play a role in this, such as the Healthcare Sector Coordinating Council and HISAC. I think they both play key roles in working together with medical device manufacturers as well as providers. There's other organizations too, like MITA and AVIMED, that are more specific for medical device manufacturers or specifically imaging, that are all starting to either focus around cybersecurity or create subcommittees that are focused on cybersecurity and address the needs of their constituents or the needs of the patients. So I think all of that's really good. And none of that really existed 5 years ago. It was all just, chatter at that point in time. So to see where the industry's come in 5 years is truly amazing.
I want to hit on something that you said earlier.
Sure.
If people didn't have access to security education within Siemens, how did you provide the mentorship or the resources for those people to either better their security understanding or become security researchers, things like that?
Good question. So we started off really kind of looking at how the organization operates mm-hmm. and tried to figure out a way that we can speak their language. And one of the ways that we figured out how to do that is through quality gates. So in building medical devices, you have, or actually any devices, you have a sense of quality gates. So you go anywhere from, you know, imagination to design. It's your SDLC, basically. And we're able to take a look and see what that SDLC looks like and then write documentation into their SDLC process where they need to go through a quality gate specifically for cybersecurity. And so we started writing a lot of content for them to go through these gates through their development and design process. And in some cases, you know, it was easy sailing. It made sense. They did it. In other cases, they started scratching their heads and going, wait a second, I've never seen this before. I don't know what it means. But we have a central security, a product security group at Siemens where they were able to reach out, engage us, and we would work with them to give them the facilities and the training that they needed to be successful. I think the other thing that the FDA helped with, as well as internal to Siemens, is we created a threat and risk assessment, which is a required activity through FDA, and that enabled us to go out and really visit all of these product teams one-on-one in person and do a full evaluation of those products from a security perspective. And that gave us an opportunity to actually sit one-on-one with product managers, R&D teams, you name it, anyone that has to touch that device in any way. Give us an opportunity for 3 days to a week to really focus them on cyber and train them, educate them, you know, kind of show them the world of cyber and how it impacts them. The other thing that I did that was really effective is I said, hey, you know what? If you're a developer, if you're an R&D, and there are things that you've always wanted to do in a product, but you could never get the resource or the funding for, if you can figure out how to turn that thing into a cyber issue, then we'll back you on it. And you would be amazed at how many things started coming out of the woodwork. We found things that, I mean, would just boggle your mind. Like, oh, we want to shut this off, and we want to turn this off and that off. It was great because we actually were able to reduce scope, get rid of some old legacy stuff, and just really clean out the basement.
I'm conscious that we've talked about a lot of stuff that's really niche to medical device makers and government relations, which is good for folks who are in that community. But for others, like, do you get out and talk to the doctors and the patients who use your products very often? And like, what's their impression? How do they feel it makes their life better?
Yeah, that's a great question. I will tell you that I do get out there quite a bit. Almost every part of Siemens has a customer advisory board, whether it's UI, UX, or whether it's clinical training, you name it. And because cyber's become such a big topic, I'm regularly getting invited out to those conferences. And a matter of fact, I was just at an imaging conference where I had a room full of radiologists and radiology managers who are using our equipment, and I was asked for their continuing education credit to give them an hour lecture on cyber. And, you know, I do talk on a regular basis. I usually get high marks. That was probably the worst speaking engagement ever.
No, from what happened?
Yeah, from a marking perspective, because everyone said, you know, great information, dynamic speaker, has nothing to do with me. You know, so they just didn't care. And that's disheartening in some ways, but honestly, it's a reality mm-hmm. for me, because then I can go back to my R&D teams, my product teams, and say, look, you got to make these devices secure, and you got to make it so that way clinicians don't have to care. It's got to be invisible.
Yeah.
Right. Because at the end of the day, they have to use it for that clinical function, not enter in, you know, 24 character complex characters that change every time you use it. It's just not, it's not something that they need to be involved in. We need to do it for them.
Just as an I get you, I did a talk and I got the same thing. Great content, so good. What? I don't, this is not about me. And my comment back to the group was, no, everybody's a patient. We all need to care. And it, that just, that that's the one thing that has always stuck with me, that one review.
Yeah, I did a panel at the Heart Rhythm Society a couple of years ago, and was talking to a room full of doctors, and this was like over dinner or something. And about half of the, about a third of them were like, yeah, this is an important thing, which I was surprised it was that high. About 80% of them said their patients had been asking them questions about security, and they wanted to know, like, that's why they were there. And there were a handful that said, like, this doesn't matter. You know, I think one of them basically said, you should be ashamed about talking about cybersecurity to a bunch of physicians. We're here to save lives. This is never going to, like, have a significant impact on hospitals. Literally the next morning, WannaCry happened. Yep. And I don't know who that doctor was, but I always wonder, like, did he see that news? Did it make an impact? I think that's one of the sad things about what we do is it always seems like a pain in the ass until something like that catastrophic happens, mm-hmm. at which point it was never enough, right? So, like, I totally agree with you. Making the security part fade into the background so it's just seamless to patients and physicians is the goal, because when they know about it, it's usually not a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, let's figure out a way to let doctors be doctors, and then we'll handle the cyber stuff for them. When doctors become cyber experts, then, you know, maybe we're taking away some of their brain power that should be dedicated to, you know, clinical functions and healing. I don't know.
Yeah, that's right.
Before we do that, we've got about 2 minutes. Do you have anything you want to impart on us and everyone else?
Sure. So, I guess my parting thoughts would be that, you know, this is a team sport. Whether it's in healthcare or any other industry, in order for us to really be a secure community, we have to involve everyone that we can, and we have to be open-minded to new ideas and new approaches and really work together as a team to solve the problems that we're experiencing in cyber. I honestly think that we're really at the beginning of this problem. I think if you look at cyber as an industry, we're maybe what, 20, 25 years old, which is pretty new. And there's a race to get more and more people into this industry because it's so critical. You know, when we look at flying airplanes, we look at voting, we look at how our lives are really impacted by technology. We really need to make sure that the technology is supporting all of what it's supposed to support and not really hurting us on the back end. And I think that there's a lot of ways that technology is hurting us. If you've ever seen, you know, a senior citizen try and reset their password, you know, it could be quite daunting and frustrating, and we're really losing a lot of people with the how fast technology is moving. And mm-hmm. and so we need to not only think about how secure it is, but is it really doing the job that it's supposed to do? But, you know, if we don't really work together, then we're never going to have a fighting chance.
Dave Nathans from Siemens Health and Ears, thank you so much for being our guest on White Hats and Lab Coats. We will talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the White Hats and Lab Coats podcast, presented by the Biohacking Village. Find us on iTunes, Google, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Join the community conversation and expand your gray matter on Twitter at @DC_BHV. And get transcripts, links, and show notes at whitehatslabcoats.org.